Okay, today is August 25th, and I am Hillary Domisch, back again at Experimental Station in Wilmington, Delaware, for the second day of our oral history interview with Dr. Uma Chowdhury. And yesterday, we had finished up talking about what we described a little bit as kind of a trial by fire.
That's right.
That you were in charge of this very, very large chemical intermediates business unit, and you were trying to get plants in Texas, plants in Spain on board, and some of it went well and some of it didn't. And it just,
exactly.
You said you learned a lot.
I sure did. I sure learned a lot. It actually, you know, a lot of the themes about what I talked about yesterday were about taking risks, having the courage to take the risks, recognizing that some risks are going to result in failure, and some will result in success. But that's what innovation is really all about. It's the will to take informed risks, you know, prudent risks, and expect high rewards for the investments that you make. So we had made a large investment in both those plants,
mm-hmm.
and one of them, as I said, has performed superbly well. And the other one, we couldn't get there from where we were without spending a lot of capital dollars.
Yeah.
And the business at the time could not afford to spend that many capital dollars. And so we did the best we could to make product by using another intermediate. Which we could introduce in the middle of the process. And so we're able to fulfill the orders that we were receiving. That was in 96, 97. Since then, we've divested that business.
Okay.
Because we divested nylon, polyester. We also divested Lycra.
Hmm.
Commoditization resulted in incredibly low prices that couldn't justify reinvestment economics. And that's the inevitable truth about globalization. It has its pluses, it has some minuses. But as I said, I learned a lot about taking risks, managing risks, managing a business while being on trial.
Mm-hmm.
So there were lots of aspects of it, of staying calm, being reasonable, trying to break the problem down into small steps, attacking things one step at a time, no matter how long it took, having a lot of patience, and finding the best experts we had in DuPont to attack the problem.
Now, was this the many trips that you made to Spain,
mm-hmm.
to help with this plant, was this the first time that you were managing on kind of a global scale?
Yes. That's right. The first time I was managing a business was for the Americas,
right.
And largely North America. And now this was a global business. So it was incredibly insightful, opened my eyes to a lot of things about what it takes to make money. It's hard, believe me. From there, after that assignment, I went on to become an R&D director of a large organization. And then again, from there, I went to, it was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, memory starts to fade now. But DuPont Engineering Technologies, where I went after the R&D assignment, and I did strategic planning and R&D management while in the chemicals organization, and went on to engineering, which wasn't something that I had ever thought I would be doing. But when it was offered to me, it sounded like an intriguing challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The person you would think about as an engineer. I was more a scientist than an engineer, although my degree does say engineering.
Yes.
But, you know, people who graduate from Caltech and MIT, it depends on the degree on the work they do and on the professor they have, because it can bend towards more science or towards more engineering. At any rate, I went into DuPont Engineering Technology, into an organization that was feeling that it didn't get the respect of the corporation at the time. It had gone through severe downsizing, and so morale was very low. And I took upon myself to learn the history of the organization from the early days of DuPont, actually, and what made engineering as proud as it felt about itself. The people were excellent. It was a big organization that primarily helped manufacturing plants at the time recover from their various crises. So they were incredible people, and I would listen to them at length to understand their feelings, their what they thought about the DuPont companies. Processes, how they could help even further, etc.
Was there any sort of backlash? Is too strong a word. I don't want to say that, but was there any concern that you were going to be in charge of this group of engineers? And as you said, even though engineering is in your degree title,
right.
They
didn't identify.
Really,
they didn't identify with me. You know, they didn't really know me,
mm-hmm.
so they gave me the benefit of the doubt,
good.
Which was very good. And I, because, you know, they had gone through a pretty massive downsizing.
Okay.
And so, you know, I figured what I can do is lift their spirit and give them hope for the future,
because
mm-hmm. they were feeling very insecure. And I worked hard to lay out a strategy that involved not only working with the manufacturing sites, but working even more closely with R&D, as well as working with the marketing and tech service organization, which they had not done before.
Mm-hmm.
But they had incredible skills and capabilities to offer to the corporation. And I think, you know, by the time I left, I would say to a person, they were very happy with what I had done for them. I had promoted a new brand name for them, a brand name that they had picked upon before I got there, but I promoted it to the point where it became second nature. Now everybody knows it as DuET, DuPont Engineering Technology.
Right.
That's not how they were known before.
Huh.
And so, you know, the brand became important. I went and promoted them with all the heads of businesses, which didn't quite appreciate what these folks could do. And I promoted them with the chairman, with the office of the chairman, etc. So they got a lot of visibility, and I felt confident in promoting them because I knew they could deliver.
Right.
They do deliver. They are very conscientious people. And it was fun to watch the organization's morale improve, grow. The organization grew while I was there, and they started having a lot of fun. And they made new connections with R&D and marketing. They started helping their customers were internal businesses,
but the
external customers which whose eyes were opened by the capability DuPont has. It's the breadth and depth of that engineering technology organization is very impressive.
Yeah.
So I felt like really satisfied at the end of that journey,
yeah.
with the DuET organization. And then was offered the vice president of CR&D. And that was, you know, coming back to my roots. I knew this place, I'd grown up here, but it had changed enormously,
mm-hmm.
from a technology-driven organization to now very much a market-driven organization. And I was glad to see that because it was appropriate for the time. And I had been doing market-driven work in the business units myself. And here I found an organization that had a hunger to learn about business, had a hunger to connect with marketing, and was extremely innovative. I knew about that, was extremely capable with regard to their science. But innovation is much more than science. It's about taking it from the lab and into the marketplace.
Right.
And for that, you need to commercialize it with the businesses. You need to have very strong relationships with marketing to get the job done. And you have to work seamlessly across these different interfaces, and which I feel I helped everybody do. In 2006, I became the CSTO.
Now, before we get on to that, I want to ask a couple of questions about when you were VP of CR&D. One of the things that I'm curious about is you had been in these positions where you were managing and running kind of business units.
Yes.
And while I'm sure that there was a lot of various types of science and research going on
there
in those
business
units.
There was also a lot of firefighting.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely.
Once you become VP of all of Central R&D,
yes,
how do you keep track of everything that's going on? Because you can't.
What you do is, and one of the main jobs is to collect around you a team of outstanding people to whom you can delegate responsibilities and accountabilities. So in the end, I was accountable for everything that went on in Central Research, but I had excellent directors reporting to me. Several of them I had known very well in the past. Excellent team of R&D directors in the business units, and I formed a council of the business unit R&D leaders as well as the CR&D leaders, and the collaborations, reached an all-time high, I feel, between the different organizations and between marketing especially. You have to learn to delegate responsibility. I know, you know, there is a tendency for people to want to know everything. You can't know everything. It's just too diverse a portfolio of businesses and too diverse a portfolio of programs in science. I would know enough about the key objectives of the different programs, and I would know enough about the key milestones that were necessary to get across the finish line. And my job was to, I felt, first when I came in, I was given the services part of Central Research, so all the analytical, the computing, the toxicology, and so on. I had to streamline that organization, which was a difficult task, but it was
necessary. Had you ever been involved in something like that before?
Yes, unfortunately, all through my career, there's been some of that. We had just finished divesting these businesses, and so all the services that supported those businesses suddenly didn't have a client anymore.
Yeah.
And so we needed to do the streamlining, which I did, and did it in as humane and, dignified way as I possibly could. A lot of people were older and chose to retire, etc. So, the demographics helped in the downsizing. And it gave me a chance to get to know the people, get to know the services well, etc. And then when I was given the research programs as well, it took a while to get up to speed on all the different areas because we had started investing a lot in biology, something I wasn't familiar with at all. But that was the organization that really needed the maximum funds because it was a new incubator and we needed to grow it.
Right.
And I learned a lot. It had a very capable director who could handle the day-to-day things and manage the programs. My luxury was to learn. And the challenge of learning has been lots of fun for me throughout my career. Because in every role I've had, in every job I've had, there's been so much new for me to learn that I have constantly grown as a result, as an R&D leader. And, you know, as I was telling you yesterday, having been a business leader, I can really appreciate all the tugs and pulls a general manager has to bend and give to be able to manage the bottom line. So I became very reasonable for business leaders to talk to. I would be flexible about, shutting down programs if they just couldn't afford to commercialize something. Mm-hmm. It wasn't going to go forward, etc. So strong relationships with the businesses, strong relationships with the marketing organization, a very vibrant R&D organization that had a lot of hope for the future, allowed me to really enjoy the role. We, in my tenure, delivered the highest percentage of DuPont revenue in new products that I could find in documented history. So it culminated in a lot of exciting work that delivered to the bottom line. So I'm very, very proud of my tenure as CSTO. And very happy with my DuPont career and what I learned from it. So retired in 2010 in December, having had an excellent career and enjoyed, being part of the top group in the company, the operating team, ability to influence decisions, ability to promote innovation, because I have passion for it. I really think it's the only way to succeed going forward. You know, yes, you have to cut cost, but you have to constantly be focused on the top line and have the balance between the short term and the long term. I would tell my colleagues, you have to learn to work with bifocal lenses. Be focused on the short term, deliver results consistently, but create hope for the future by investing in it. And luckily for me, this company has transformed itself several times. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. This is our third century. Yes. You know, not many companies survive for 209 and 10 years and remain in the Fortune 50. It's pretty amazing. And has created innovations and brand names that have changed people's lives. Mm-hmm. So what DuPont does best is take on really big challenges, go where no man has gone before, and create innovations that really impact people's lives. So I'm very proud of this company. It has been an amazing two centuries plus of continual transformations. And, a company that survives this long has a very strong corporate ideology and a corporate purpose. And we have very strong core values. If you survey anybody in this company, your husband will tell you about safety.
Yes.
And respect for ethics, respect for people, and so on. One of the things I did as I was in my role as the Chief Technology Officer is globalize R&D. It is necessary. It is not something people should look upon as with fear. I think that the opportunities are just enormous for corporations to grow because the world population is growing so enormously. I mean, we're already at 7 billion, we'll be 9 billion by 2050. And the opportunity that creates is just enormous. So people, rising out of poverty and into the middle class and creating that option for people has always been the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us to support globalization from DuPont has always been kind of, it was almost a natural and inevitable result of all our beliefs. We invested in a lab in China. I started up the lab in India, started up a small operation in South America, and I'm sure DuPont will soon invest in Russia and the Middle East. We have historically found that every time we go in with technical presence, first we go in with marketing mm-hmm. presence, establish manufacturing presence, marketing presence, understand supply chains. But if you don't have the tech service people that can help customers understand our products and use our products, your market share doesn't grow.
Right.
However, as soon as we bring in a tech service center or an R&D center, and both in our case, we have watched market share really grow.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot of faith in the fact, you know, what we believe is that if we provide innovative, differentiated products to our customers, not only will we grow, we will help them grow.
Right.
And the more important thing is making sure that they continue to grow and give us more business.
Right.
So we have, we've made it a habit now that we will continually transform ourselves. We will constantly look at the world, look at mega trends. And the mega trends we've selected for DuPont are about feeding people,
mm-hmm.
about alternate energy, and about, you know, alternate energy, I mean, reducing our dependence on fossil fuels.
Yes.
And providing more safety and security to people. In general, I would say all of the programs in this company, R&D programs, are aimed at sustainability in one way or another. Whether it's sustainability of the planet, you know, over the years, the environment has deteriorated significantly.
Yes.
And when you improve the material standard of living of people around the world and are dependent on fossil fuel, you stress the planet's environment. You stress resources, you stress the atmosphere. And so we feel quite strongly that we must do everything to mitigate environmental disaster. So every program that we put in place, especially in CR&D, we always ask the question about sustainability. What will this do for improving the planet?
Mm-hmm.
Will it help improve the energy use? Will it help reduce fossil fuel? Will it help create more secure lives? And so on. So, you know, not that we won't continue to sell the old products that are badly needed by the growing population in the world, but every new product that we introduce will, by fiat, you know, we sort of put down a rule that we will improve our footprint by 40% with every new product that we introduce. That was a tall order. We don't always achieve that, but we get pretty close in many cases. So
now, does that go for trying to make the existing manufacturing processes
improve the manufacturing
mm-hmm.
processes as well as improve the way we make our new products?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What
mm-hmm.
other sources of energy we will use? You know, so it can also mean something like if we are trying to lightweight an automobile, when you create a lighter automobile, it consumes less fuel,
right.
and therefore reduces the CO2, the emissions,
mm-hmm.
and therefore the pollution in the air. So our lightweighting materials may not necessarily be completely different from the old materials, may still use fossil fuel, but the impact on the environment from the use of them is superior.
Yes.
So somewhere along the value chain, we will have reduced the environmental footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission in this company is sustainable growth. we will commit to reducing the environmental footprint, not only in our own, within our own boundaries, but along the value chains that we operate. So, you know, with that kind of a noble goal, people are attracted to come here. When we recruit young people today are incredibly environmentally conscious, right? And they have aspirations of really helping the world. Many of them go and do sojourns in Africa and India and China before they finish their senior year and before they go to college even, or even in their college years.
Mm-hmm.
So we hire both bachelor's degree people as well as PhDs. And when I would talk to many of them, you know, they really have very tall social aspirations and societal aspirations, in addition to wanting to make health impact the business. It's very heartening to see that, very encouraging to see that. And
do you think that some of the aspirations that people have today, the new employees who are coming in that have
yes.
had experiences or been around the
yes.
world a little bit, do you think that that's different? Because you had said coming out of your PhD that you made a decision to go into industry as
yes.
opposed to academia because you felt like you could impact more people. So
absolutely. So what has changed? What has changed is we want to impact more people, but do it in an environmentally sustainable way. I think that is different.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't hear all those words as much when I was growing up. But it is so much in the news now. Everybody's aware of it. And, you know, it just takes traveling around the world to see that America consumes wastefully far more than any other country. And it brings home the fact that our energy use is unacceptably large, and we're going to have to help reduce it. So I'm very encouraged by this youth that I see coming through a school and graduate school, those that are educated and those that are good enough to enter the gate here have that kind of aspiration, which is wonderful to see.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've interacted enough with the employees who are at central R&D kind of, or at R&D sites in the other countries.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think that this desire to improve innovation, not just for people around the world, but really with this kind of sustainable purpose,
yes.
is that something that's American, or is that something that's just increasingly commonplace among new scientists and younger scientists?
Around the world. It's commonplace around the world. And with today's internet traffic and social networking, everybody's talking to everybody else. And technology news travels very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be nimble. You know, if you want to be successful as a corporation in today's world, you have to be hungry. And the work ethic has to be really strong, because you're competing now with talented people all over the world who are working incredibly hard. And so, you know, the job does get complex once you've globalized. It's a 24/7 kind of job,
yeah.
because, you know, it's not fair to them if we are always calling them during times that are convenient to us. So we would always make sure that sometimes the calls would be at night here or early morning here. And, you know, it has to be a fair world in the DuPont system. Our folks that we hire in these countries for DuPont all have the same understanding of what mega trends we're going after, what our passion is all about, all our safety and people core values. Everybody shares that, everybody understands that, and everybody is very, very excited about innovation. So when we go with R&D presence to a country, not only are our people excited, but the governments get really excited and give us all kinds of incentives to be there. So it is something that's a lot of, I had a lot of fun doing it, and hope to continue those interactions, actually.
Do you bring people, you had mentioned yesterday that when you were trying to get the plant in Astoria, get it really going, that at a certain point you had to have people from here go there for 6 months or a year or something like that. So was that something that regularly happens? You know, when you open an R&D site in Brazil or in India, are you sending people from here?
We did do that in China.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing more of it in India now. We're doing it in Brazil as well. We have to get it going. You have to have experienced management to be able to just bring people up to speed.
Right.
And then, you know, select from them people who have the potential to be local leaders and then bring the expats home. But it does take a while. It takes time.
Yeah.
And we have to be patient with it. Because they're so new, and, you know, they just haven't had the kind of training that we've been through. Schools, though, are increasingly excellent in these countries, and so the undergraduate training that they get is pretty good standards. So we've been very pleased with the hires we've brought in to China, India, as well as in Brazil. Very pleased.
Do you see a lot of the people who you are sending over to China or India? Are a lot of them people who were originally from China or India that are then kind of going back?
We have done some of that, but not exclusively that. In the R&D labs, I did send people of Chinese origin and Indian origin and Spanish origin, yes. It wasn't exclusively that. I also sent some management that was American or Swiss, you know, because we have a lab in Geneva.
Okay.
So, in fact, we are now going to send an English gentleman who's working in Switzerland to our India lab. So, it's cross-fertilization of a lot of different cultures and ideas, capabilities. So to get it off the ground, I feel quite strongly that we have to spend the money to send expats.
Mm-hmm.
It's just necessary to be successful. Mm-hmm. And in marketing and sales, we've always had Americans in different countries doing that. And now we're trying to grow the local leaders much more.
Right.
Much more. So now, in China, for instance, my successor here is a Canadian gentleman, actually, who spent 5-6 years in China building that organization in Shanghai. And he grew a successor for himself who is of Chinese origin.
Mm-hmm.
So, and has worked here in America, so he knows the system. It really helps to know the people here, because the R&D leaders have to be talking to all the technology directors in this country, you know, for resources, for programs, because the programs tend to be global in nature.
Right.
So you have to be talking constantly. So it's been an interesting learning experience for everybody.
Now,
successfully.
As you're starting to increase the number of R&D sites around the world as Chief Science and Technology Officer, is this the type of thing where you are just constantly on the phone with different countries at different times of the day, or are you traveling all the time to all of these different sites?
Well, I would travel at least once a year to all these sites, but sometimes twice a year, but I wasn't doing it all the time.
Okay.
We set up a video conferencing capability here. We also, I would send our directors, because, you know, they're closer to the programs.
Mm-hmm.
People like to see the CTO, because, you know, most of these corporate organizations a hierarchical in nature. So people do like to see the CTO, but they are closer to the immediate management and the directors
right.
who are running the programs. So I enjoyed it thoroughly, the travel through through all these different laboratories. It's amazing how much innovation was going on, how fired up people are about what they're talking about and telling you about. So it would just energize me enormously every time I left Wilmington.
Yeah.
You know, here you're in meetings a lot, and you're in, sometimes, you know, you wonder whether all those meetings are necessary. But once you get out into the different countries, they are just hurrying to get stuff out the door. You know, they have a lot of passion, a lot of desire to be successful.
Is there, now we're sitting here in experimental station,
yeah.
and I have no idea what your labs or anything like that looks like. I'm sure they are incredibly state of the art, but this site has been here
forever.
Forever, exactly.
No, more than 100 years. Yeah.
So when you go to these new research sites in India or China or wherever, is there part of you that's maybe a little bit jealous that sometimes you think, wow, they get to work in this brand new place? And, you know, I worked in experimental station and that was great, but this is brand new.
I wouldn't say jealousy as much as I felt grateful for the opportunity to have built these brand new labs and capabilities. They are beautiful. And they get state-of-the-art equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you know, we'll have more state-of-the-art equipment here, and we have critical mass here that they lack,
yeah.
right? And the level of expertise, the breadth and the depth of expertise at the experimental station is unparalleled. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses. Yes, we have antiquated labs here. many of them are not modern at all. But the quality of the work doesn't have to suffer. You know, chemicals are chemicals, and what you do with them is really up to how innovative you can be. And, you know, so much has changed over the years. We had a beautiful library here, and everybody does the stuff online now.
Right.
So nobody goes to the library. And it breaks my heart to see a library of the quality we had, you know, change so drastically. But, you know, it isn't affordable anymore to keep adding to the library collection when you can get it online.
Right.
People don't walk out very far out of their offices and their laboratories. You know, even going from one building to another building across to the top of the hill, there's inertia. It's amazing. You see people on your floor in general.
And that's it.
That's it. And unless you call, you set up forums to create the social interaction,
right.
or the seminars, things like that. And the terrace on the mall where people go to eat lunch. So then informal conversations occur there.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I read about when I was trying to read up for your research file,
yeah.
a little bit about kind of DuPont's global presence is, I hope I get the name correct, the DuPont Knowledge Center,
yeah.
in Hyderabad.
That's correct.
And I was just wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that. Is that the research
sciences
with the fancier name?
Well, we have, yeah, sort of. It's our... it's a beautiful site. It has R&D. It also has some engineering. So we also do design, engineering design there. So which we don't call R&D. So it's beyond R&D to include engineering. And so the decision to call it Knowledge Center, you know, the Indians wanted to name it themselves and felt a lot of ownership for it. And wanted to be different from the other labs. China calls themselves the China Technical Center, so CTC. And so India wanted to call itself something different. And they came up with Knowledge Center. That was their idea. And I think it's kind of nice. They feel that they are unique in that they have everything under one roof. Biology, chemistry, polymers, electronics, as well as engineering. That's more breadth and of capability, more diversity of programs than China does. Hmm. We haven't put biology in China so much.
So now that you are Chief Science and Technology Officer Emeritus,
yes.
And you've stepped back a little bit.
A lot. No, I have.
Okay.
No, that's now it's Doug Mazika who runs the place, and it's only appropriate that I step back. Yeah, I'm mostly involved in external things that are like I'm on the advisory board of the National Institute of Standards,
mm-hmm.
or the nominating committee of the National Academy of Engineering, or if NSF wants. Some business expertise, I was there for a panel discussion. I was up for an energy workshop and came, you know, you just get invitations to go to different venues to talk about, through your experience,
right.
about the different views that you may have on subjects that are important to me and to DuPont. So
okay.
I've enjoyed the role. And we'll continue this for as long as I enjoy it. I'm on the board of a company which I really enjoy. So I just have a smorgasbord of stuff I do, and it's fine.
So is the traveling that you do now maybe
more domestic?
More domestic.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah, yeah. Much more confined.
A little less tiring.
Yeah, much less tiring. I'm happy with that. I've always enjoyed being there. I do not enjoy the process of getting there.
No.
Nobody does. But, you know, these long flights and long journeys, really, it got to me after a while.
Well, and especially, I mean, as you said yesterday, you know, flying to Asturias,
yeah.
is practically an entire day, flying to India, flying to Brazil,
yeah.
flying
and then
to
lack
China,
of
none
sleep,
of these are close.
But no. No, so it wears on you.
Yeah.
And if you don't get enough sleep, you know, it's really hard on the body.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't miss that part of it.
Well, since you are doing less international traveling,
yes.
you can maybe reflect on those experiences
mm-hmm.
a little bit more. Do you think, let me see, obviously, the world has moved towards being a global
mm-hmm.
industry and a global site.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly, as you said, there are many, many reasons why DuPont and other industries need to think globally.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of students and young scientists,
mm-hmm.
should students and young scientists be considering not just working in the United States? I mean, if you're a young American science student, should you be assuming that you'll be going to India or China or one of these other places? Or should that be an aspiration in the way it was your aspiration to go from India to the United States?
That's a good question. I think that, if I look at where would I go to university today, I would say without any hesitation it would still be the U.S. the best graduate schools, best colleges and graduate schools in the world. When it comes to K through 12, it's not a happy state, as you well know. And, parents do think about sending their children abroad for
mm-hmm.
K through 12. Some of the people who go as expats to these different countries have the luxury of sending their children to the American school. The American school in these countries is excellent and higher standards, like a private school here. So they get the benefit of that kind of schooling. Whether people today are already thinking about jobs in the, you know, more and more we have such a melting pot here that we have Indians and Chinese that are second generation, third generation here.
Mm-hmm.
And they are thinking about going to their parents' homelands to work. So yes, I haven't found many American youth wanting to do that yet. But more and more, I do hear that it's so expensive to go to graduate school here that people are considering going to other countries for graduate school, and then may find it just as rewarding to work there. Because, well, frankly, the multinationals are everywhere now.
Yes.
So, you know, you can find yourself working for an American company sitting in Singapore, Hong Kong, Shanghai. You know, it's like being in the U.S. Lifestyle is not dissimilar.
As the research goes more and more
mm-hmm.
around the world,
mm-hmm.
do you worry at all? I mean, you spent so much of your career at Central Research here in Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
Do you worry that the caliber of research here might decline?
Might decline.
Because people who maybe would have come and been recruited to DuPont Central R&D are instead going to the Knowledge Center in Hyderabad.
Mm. I confess that I do not see the day that that could happen. Not yet.
Okay.
I mean, not for decades to come. I think that the best and the brightest, whether they're in China or India or Korea or wherever, want to still come to the U.S. You know, this is the largest economy in the world. It is still the country with the most freedom to explore. I think the American spirit of innovation and entrepreneurialism is encouraged and fostered in this country. It's nurtured in this country. If we stop investing in R&D, then all those fears come surfacing very quickly. But as long as we keep investing in R&D and innovation in this country, I think we are far enough ahead that we need to, but we need to keep that lead, which means, you know, we have to stay at the leading edge of innovation. The game-changing technologies and paradigm shifts have originated in this country by and large,
yeah.
by and large. When will that phenomenon begin to globalize and change? It may happen in the next couple of decades, you know, it might happen. The population growth is, the demographics are on their side.
Mm-hmm.
So this next 2 billion people that will come into the world will largely come from the developing countries. And their growth rates are high because they're starting from a smaller base. Our growth is stalled and hopefully won't go into a recession. But, you know, if hopefully we can get our politics together, our system together. But the national laboratory system, the investment in science and technology, investment in research by this country has historically been very large, although it is declining.
Yeah.
It's still large in absolute dollars. It's still a very large number, and I would wager to say that in biotechnology and nanotechnology, we are very far ahead of the rest of the world. So in leading edge technologies, my view is that we need to keep investing in those areas of R&D to stay at the leading edge. I feel we've lost the manufacturing
mm-hmm.
of most materials to other countries, and we watched that happen with electronics in Japan as Japan was growing, and now we see it in China. China wants to be the manufacturing hub of the world, and as long as we accept that we can provide them you know, keep transitioning the commoditized innovations to China and India and stay at the leading edge, they won't be satisfied with that. They will want to be at the leading edge themselves. But they will emulate everything right now that America does. When will that crossover occur is anybody's guess. It just depends on how much we keep investing in R&D. That's why it's so critical for our government and our corporate leaders to have a passion for innovation and keep investing in it. Because that's what differentiates us. That's what differentiates our standard of living. We cannot maintain our standard of living without. Is that Tara? Excuse me.
No,
I might want to take a break.